Welcome to the Dwell Richly podcast, a place for church musicians and pastors to be encouraged and equipped as we serve our local churches in song week by week. My name is Heather, and today with us we have...
Vaughan Roberts. Vaughan, it's lovely to have you. Tell us all about yourself. Where are you from? What you do?
Well, where I'm from, I've got red blood. So I'm Welsh by descent, born and brought up in England with Welsh parents. So brought up near Basingstoke in Hampshire. So vaguely Christian background, and got converted in my last year at school, which changed the whole direction of my life. I was assuming I was going to be a lawyer. And pretty quickly, and to my huge surprise, ended up thinking what I really wanted to do was to be a pastor and teach the Bible to people. And that's what I did from a young age. So I switched from law to theology, did a bit of student ministry in South Africa. And then I've been working at the same church, St. Ebb's Church in Oxford, now for 34 years in one role or another, the last 27 years as the rector or senior pastor. So that's my working life. And the rest of life, I'm an uncle and a great uncle and a friend. And if I was to say a sportsman, that would sound impressive. And it's not impressive, but I like playing sport.
Any sports in particular, or just anything that comes your way?
Well, life's been a series of retirements as I've got older, and my body tells me I can't do that. So I now play a bit of golf, and I play a weird and wonderful game called real tennis, which is the original form of tennis, which still exists, but only in about 45 courts in the world. But one of them happens to be 5 minutes down the road from me, and I took it up because it's a bit easier on the body than the other form of tennis.
Do you know, I've played it once in my life. So I went to Canford School once for a mission and got to play real tennis for the first time in my life and the only time in my life. It was really
well
fun.
Well done. There are not many of us out there in the world who've done that. So great. That's something we've got in common there.
I felt like it was halfway between squash, which I really enjoy because it's quite aggressive and you've got a wall, and, you know, normal tennis. So I enjoyed it, but I can't say that I did very well. They all laughed at me. I wasn't very good. And what about, so you work for quite a large church. What sort of size of team do you have? What are your main responsibilities? What does it look like week by week?
Yeah, these things are relative, but in British terms, it's quite a large church of maybe, we've got three different sites and we function as one body, but with three effectively different churches and ministries. But at the centre where I'm based, we might get 800 coming on a Sunday. And to be honest, I don't quite know, but I'm guessing about 25 staff members in various roles, including a number of pastors. So preaching is a major part of my role, but I'm not the only preacher. We've got a number of preachers. I lead the staff team. I kind of major in on vision, but I'm part of a group of leaders that work together but have ultimate responsibility under the Lord.
And given that this is a podcast that's mainly for church leaders and also for musicians, have you got any sort of music that you like in your life? What do you like to listen to in your downtime? What is your favourite thing to listen to?
Yeah, I a mixture of things, really. I love the kind of choral music classics, which I was introduced to even before I was a Christian. So Messiah is an absolute favourite, which I love going, if I possibly can, every Christmas. And I've done quite a few where I've given introductions for each part of Messiah, which works really well because it's all Bible. I love them. Bach's Matthew Passion, John Passion. Bach's cantatas are amazing, full of gospel words set to the most beautiful music. But then I'm getting quite nostalgic since lockdown. I started listening to all the stuff I listened as a teenager, which is kind of retro, and I love all that stuff, Queen and Supertramp and Bowie and all that stuff, pretending I'm young again. And then a whole eclectic mix. I can't work and listen to music because I engage with it too much. So actually it's mainly in the car that I listen to music now.
All right, so you've been working in a large church for quite a while and you've been responsible for a whole team. If you're thinking about the music team in particular, what sort of things do you think come up as issues for the music team as distinct from the other members of staff? What sort of things do they struggle with? How do you feel like they need help in different ways?
Yeah, a lot of the challenges will be common across the board. So for instance, most of the people helping with music are volunteers. And in a large church with multiple services, there's an awful lot of people who need help. So that's pretty hard for the staff member who's trying to gather them and then get certain standards out of them. But they're not employed. You can't sort of tell them what to do. So there's a complexity in that. Particular things, I think, that are not unique for music team, but actually similar to those of us who are leading up front and preaching up front, it is an upfront role. I mean, if you're in the music, you're audible, and very often you're visible, and that puts pressures. There's always the temptation to perform and to perform to other people in the room, and the desire to please them rather than first and foremost please the Lord and think what is best for these people and what is most edifying and what will be most worshipful, whether people like it or not. And of course, when it comes to music, people have very strong views, and you will, you know, every church has strong views about music, and they won't all be the same. So some people will feel strongly, we want music of a particular age, we want traditional hymns, we want modern songs, or by modern songs, we need songs in the last 6 months, we need a particular kind, we want it quicker, we want it slower, we want drums, we don't want drums, all those kind of things. That puts a pressure. And how to cope with the comments, both the good and the bad, the good. And I don't think musicians get enough positives. So by and large, when we do things up front, if it goes well, unless you're new in the role and people then say, thank you so much, isn't that marvelous? But once you've been there for a while, they take that for granted. So you don't tend to get many encouragements. But if you get lots of them, maybe after a particular piece or in a solo for a carol service or something, how do I cope with that to be able to give all the glory to the Lord, not let it go to my head? But I think a bigger problem really than letting things go to the head and over encouragement is how to cope with the discouragements and the criticisms. And I think it's just not on for church members to go direct to the music leader, or direct, even worse, direct to musicians and pass on their comments. So I'd like church leaders to cover them and kind of discourage and tell people off when they do that and say, if you've got any issue, speak to me, not to the musicians. But inevitably, musicians will pick up a kind of feel of that. And so I that's where line managers come in, and ultimately whoever's leading the team come in just to help and together work out, okay, what are we aiming for? And where is there a point? And how can we strive to get as good as we can? It'll never be perfect. And where do we think either we disagree with the criticism, or yeah, fair point, but we're doing the best we can, and let's not hear it. So how to cope with those kind of comments, or sometimes the imagined comments. So that's the other thing. People might not be saying anything, but if we're up front, we're very aware that lots of people are watching, and what are they thinking of me? And so there's a danger of an idolatry of wanting to please people. And I would say, If there's an extreme reaction to something, there's probably an idol lurking in the background. It's worth following that idol down the rabbit hole. So if there's an extreme reaction to criticism, and I'm crumpled and completely destroyed if someone doesn't think something I did musically was perfect, or an extreme reaction to praise, and I just live for it, that's a warning bell. And for me, because I have the same as a preacher and a leader, that goes back to having a very solid sense of self. So who am I? I'm a much loved child of God. And that's a wonderful thing, because it could not be more stable. So if people think...
I'm just going to interrupt there, because this is something I coach you on all the time.
Oh, good. Oh, well, yes, it's not...
I remember you saying, on my worst day, if I've screwed up, I haven't read my Bible, I'm a much loved child of God. On my best day, if I've done everything right. Like, I coach you on that so much, because it's comforting.
Well, I preach it to myself often, so I'm not surprised that it occasionally spills out and I preach for others, and you've clearly heard it, because it is liberating. If I'm nervous before doing something up front, and it might be a big musical event, just to say, I'm a much loved child of God, so if this is disastrous, it doesn't change the most important reality of my life. Mm-hmm. My life does not depend on people loving this concert or this Sunday's music. And if it's brilliant, again, it doesn't change the fundamental reality of my life. So that could be a help. So, you know, ultimately, that's where musicians can help one another. And there should be a fellowship with Christian musicians in the team that isn't just helping one another musically, although that's a really good and helpful thing to do, which includes encouragement and also includes coaching and helping, but also just a spiritual encouragement, because you're all facing the same kind of opportunities and challenges.
So, yes. As you were saying, like, quite often the same attitude problems or dangers might come up for people that are preaching, people that are leading, people that are up front doing music. So what can we be doing practically to sort of prepare ourselves for that, to prepare ourselves for the fact that if we feel like we've played well, get down and no one says anything, we feel crushed, or vice versa, we get down and people are like, oh, that was so wonderful. How can we be preparing our hearts before we even get up there, just to have our heads and our hearts in the right space?
Yeah, well, I think just to remind myself, I'm not doing this for the affirmation of people. I'm doing this for the Lord and to help serve people, that they may be built up in Christ and that together we might worship Christ and delight in him. So if I don't get what I long for, which is, oh, thank you, that was amazing, well, it's not the end of the world, because I should be trying to say to myself, I'm not doing it for that. If, of course, that's what I'm doing it for and I don't get it, then I might as well give up, because what's the point of doing it? Because I've done it to get praise. And if I don't get it, I won't do it again. Thank you very much. But no, that's not why I'm doing it. So just to test the heart and try and think, I'm here to serve. And that's another thing I'm looking for in. And we've been wonderfully well served by three amazing music directors here at St. Ebbs. They've infused the culture with the whole team. So it's not about the brilliant trumpeter or cellist or whatever doing tra-la-la bits that we go away thinking, what an amazing cellist. That often actually the best music is when you don't notice the amazing cellist, because the amazing cellist just merges with the rest of the instruments and enables congregational engagement. But if I'm going thinking I'm an amazing cellist or I've got an amazing singing voice, I want people to know that, it doesn't actually facilitate what we're about. And the congregation's voice is what most matters, unless it is deliberately designed for the congregation to be listening and engaging, which certainly has a place for solos or duets or choir pieces and so on. Mm. Often actually toning down what might get praise is going to be the most edifying. Mm. But if I'm doing it to get praise, I'll turn it up, even if it means that I'm singing a little tra-la-la on the side, which doesn't help the congregation sing the actual tune.
100%, yeah, that's brilliant. So let's just think a little bit about, have you got any thoughts about pride in general, which is just a nuance of what we were talking about there?
Yes, well, I do, and the Bible has a lot to say about pride. I should say pride is very bashful. It's an emotion that, well, it leads to a whole series of emotions that it's quite hard to face up to in myself and to say, I've been proud. And so I can normally explain the emotion away in some other way. So if someone's criticized me and I'm completely crushed, rather than thinking about my own heart and whether that is an excessive reaction to the criticism, I just say that person is terrible and they behaved really badly and how insensitive of them. Well, it might be that they behaved unwell, not well. But what about me? So just to try and look for the sin, even when someone's behaved badly, that's important. But the other side is, I think, yes, pride is a problem if we're up front, and let's face it. But as time's gone by, I think discouragement is a bigger problem. And don't forever think, bash myself up with pride. Sometimes it's just the sense that we're pouring ourselves into something. It's a lot of effort week by week, and actually we've not done it as well as we'd like to have done it. Mm-hmm. And we can be a bit downhearted about ourselves, or for whatever reason we haven't got the volunteers, so the sound hasn't been good. And just to recognize, it's wonderful to know that then there may be pride in the discouragement, because it's got to be perfect. No, it doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. But when I feel discouragement, just to remember, God uses weak people doing weak things. And we just do the best we can and keep going and trust him to use our feeble efforts and not to assume that because no one has recognized them and thanked us, that good isn't being done. Often people are insensitive and so on. So just keep going. I'm doing it for the Lord, and look to him for my encouragement. Because if I'm looking for people, then sometimes that'll lead to pride. Sometimes it'll lead to me thinking, I just can't keep going because I'm not getting the support and encouragement I need. Mm. So to keep looking to the Lord, and he knows all the efforts we're putting in. He knows our weaknesses, and he's powerful enough to use us in and through all of that.
I wonder if you see sometimes as well that church, the way that we work in church and the way that our hearts and attitudes are meant to be in church, is so different from the rest of the world. So if you had TED talkers, for instance, or CEOs coming into church, or professional musicians, or, you know, people that are used to being upfront in a secular situation, it's such a different environment, isn't it? And they're used to, like we were talking about, feeding off the praise, feeding off the feedback, all that kind of stuff. Whereas when you come into church, the focus isn't meant to be on the one in front, but that takes a lot of adjustment, doesn't it? Refocusing on what we're actually in church to do. And it can be really difficult, when, especially like even in social media or anything. Everything is about what are you getting out of this? What praise, adulation, all that kind of stuff. But actually, we're not here to point towards ourselves and our own skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's about a mindset and a heart set. And for those who are used to inhabiting other spheres, where, as you say, it tends to be about me, it does need watching. We've had over the years some international standard musicians who can and do concerts and recordings and so on. And they have been, to a woman and man, amazing, because they've been happy to be part of a group. And in that group, that they're not standing out as the prima donna and they're not getting special treatment. And in some cases, people wouldn't, I mean, certainly in the congregation, that they may well have no idea that this person is well known in their sphere, but they're just fitting in. So there've been a number of wonderful models of how to inhabit that. And I've only got to assume that they take the same attitude into their professional musical life. So you're right, there's a big difference, but there shouldn't be, in the sense that no one who's a Christian should act as a prima donna in any sphere. So Christians should be noticeable, that rather than, you know, even though they're the headline in a concert, they're not overly demanding, that they're not expecting people to put them on a pedestal and meet their every desire, which would to be different in every context.
Yeah. Okay. So could we finish? Just have you got a couple of places in the Bible that you could point people towards that would, if I'm just thinking about the normal musician that's serving week by week, places in the Bible you could point them towards that would encourage them about why they're doing what they're doing and how to keep going in it week by week when it's hard, when it's not very encouraging, all that kind of stuff. What would what suggest for that?
Well, so much. I mean, whatever you do, the whole Bible, certainly. I mean, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all for the glory of God, Colossians 3. That applies to the whole of life, including music. We've been studying as a church Philippians recently, and Philippians 2 had the same mindset as that of Christ Jesus, who in very nature God did not consider equality be God something to be with God something to be grasped. He wasn't trying to cling on to the glory that was his by absolute right, but made himself nothing and became a servant. And that is the Christian calling. It's not about me. I'm willing to go low and consider others better than myself. And when I'm discouraged, to remember that's the Lord I'm serving. So he's a Lord I can trust. I mean, he went low for me. And so he's a God I can absolutely, he's not, if I'm occasionally discouraged, maybe by the leadership of the church who are not encouraging me and supporting me, or by others who are pushing themselves forward for their own sakes, and I feel I'm put in the background, the Lord I worship and serve is a Lord who humbled himself for me and loves me and calls me his much loved child. And I don't deserve it a bit. I mean, it's just going back to what we were saying earlier, that sense of my identity as his beloved child will get me through an awful lot in life with the Holy Spirit applying it to my heart.